This is the official EFL podcast with Mark Clement.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the official EFL podcast with me, Mark Clement. And in this first episode of 2023, we'll reflect on those three rounds of festive fixtures, more high profile managerial departures, and after his sad passing, we'll pay our own tribute to the godlike genius of arguably the world's greatest ever player. We'll do it in the company of Mr. EFL himself. It's the official EFL podcast. Yep, can't think of a better guest to kick us into the new year than the man who's been at the helm of Wycombe Wanderers for the past decade, saved them from relegation out of the EFL three times, led them to playoff finals, twice to promotion, including for the first time into the Sky Bet Championship. And you know what, Gareth Ainsworth, Pele. I'm going to bring worlds together here because everybody's been waxing lyrical about his football, but somebody tipped me off that he'd made an album and I looked it up and it's called Pele Ginga, which I believe means to sway. Ginga means to sway. It was brought out in 2006. Mate, it's not bad. There's a track on it called Acredita No Veo, which translates as Listen to the Old Man. It's been remixed by Fatboy Slim and Lord knows. Actually, he's decent. Look him up, mate. You can stream him on Spotify.
I missed it.
He's decent.
I have to look at this. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, he is. He's got that lovely, rich brogue of a voice, and he lilts along. And oh, yeah, I quite enjoyed it, actually.
Super cool.
Where were you when you heard the news, and how big a moment was it to hear that he passed?
Yeah, I can't remember. I saw it on TV. Was I in a hotel room? I think it was just in a hotel room. Yeah, waiting for a game where we were away. And when, you know, he'd passed. Do you know what? No, I'll tell you exactly where I was. I remember now because we'd come out of the hotel. We were at Plymouth. So we were away at Plymouth the 29th, wasn't it? And yeah, we were away at Plymouth. And now I know, a fan came up to me and said, have you heard the news? And we were pre-game. So this was maybe 6 o'clock in the evening at Plymouth. We'd got there and a fan came up to me. That was it. A Plymouth fan came up to me and said, have you heard the news? I went, no. And he went, Pele's died. And I was, honestly, Clem, it hit me because I'll go into it in a minute. Me and my brother were massive fans growing up with Pele, like everyone was, but we were obsessed. But I remember then going into the dressing room and saying to the boys, like, you know, Pele's passed. And then the minute's applause was organised really quickly, which was great from Plymouth Argyle, you know, because he actually played there. I don't know if you know this. He played at Plymouth. So there was a game he played in at Plymouth. And now I didn't know this. And a picture came up on the screen during the minute's applause, and it was Pele. I'm sure that he played at home park, yeah. So there was a...
Was it a Brazil representative team then?
I don't know. I haven't looked into it, but he definitely was a picture of Pele and it looked like home park. So they had a massive connection with Pele. The applause was brilliant. Big moment for me because, as I say, me and my brother watching the football growing up, he was the man. He was the man.
The greatest of all time, or is it impossible to do the comparisons with how the game was back then when, let's be honest, we've all seen the video footage over the last week. He was getting hacked to pieces. It was a tough existence. Is it almost impossible to draw comparisons with modern
era? I think every person has their own greatest, and I think that's important. So my greatest is Pele, yeah. I think I was lucky enough to see Maradona. I was lucky enough to see Zidane and obviously Messi and Ronaldo. I never saw Pele play live, but the footage growing up, there's a great video going around, Club. I don't know if you've seen it, called Pele Did It First. And it's, have a look at this.
Yes, I have.
Pele Did It First.
Just describe it for us. What's in it?
It shows Johan Cruyff doing his Cruyff. Pele did it 20 years earlier. It shows Ronaldo doing his little one-tick. Pele did it 20 years earlier. It shows Messi scoring a free kick. Pele did it earlier. It shows all these Maradona around the world, all these body swerves, everything. And you go back 20, 30, 40 years, Pele did it first. And it was, and probably someone did it before Pele, but Pele was the one who was the man, you know. And we grew up, Clem, me and my brother. So this is 80s now, right in the early 80s. I'm a 73 baby. So 8, 9, 10, 83, 84, 85. the videos, the Betamax, I'll say, were embarrassingly with VHS. Oh my God. We used to be that family that walked into the video shop and we had one shelf. Everyone else had the whole store. We had one shelf of Betamax. I'll never forgive me, Dad. But it was called The Boys from Brazil. Now, and please, if anyone's listening to this, search it on YouTube. It's on there. It's called The Boys from Brazil. And it goes through Brazil from about 1950 to 1986, and right in the middle is the chunk of Pelé, and I'm getting a little hairs standing up now, because some of the stuff that he did, we used to try and replicate. We'd take the ball down the field in Blackburn, and we'd be on Plettgate Field in Blackburn. Whoever's from Blackburn will know what I'm talking about. We're trying to replicate Pelé's moves on Plettgate Field, and me and my brother, massive Pelé fans, and so that hit me hard. Yeah, real loss to the football world, but he's left a hell of a legacy.
Yeah. Podcast at EFL.com with your, don't look it up if you don't know what Betamax is. Just send me what you think it might be. And if you had a reason as to why Mr. Ainsworth Senior actually went in that format rather than VHS, that would be rather useful as well. The other part of this is, I think it's relevant, which is why I mention it. I wouldn't normally, but my missus is black. We were with a load of her friends when the news broke. I was the only white person in the room. There was 7-8 black people. People who normally don't have any conversation with me about my job because football's not their interest.
Yeah.
They damn well knew who Pelé was and insisted that we all raise our glasses I mean, a black icon, if ever there was one as well, breaking down barriers too, guys.
Yeah, South America. I mean, my children are half South American, half Venezuelan. So a big South American connection there as well for me. He was Pelé. It wasn't, you didn't look at him as a race, a colour, a country. He was just this icon of football. And as you say, you know, my son came to me the other day and said, do you know why he was called Pelé, Dad? And I didn't know this story. Apparently he was a bullied at school and they called him Pelé at school and it stuck. And these stories now that are coming out, unbelievable stories about the man. And just amazing, amazing talent. And for me, the greatest, but we'll all argue too, we're blue in the face and about Messi, Ronaldo and Zidane and Pelé and Maradona, but no, for me there was only one, and that was the first one I saw, Pelé.
Yeah, great excuse to watch Escape the Victory as well, which Channel 5 had on, I think it was the day after his passing. I'm assuming it's on their kind of iPlayer-y arrangement. My goodness me, I've forgotten what a great film that was. Oh. Even though I knew the outcomes, I was still out of my seat when they got the equaliser, punch in the air. My missus thought I was absolutely stupid. The greatest compliment I can pay to you at Wycombe Wanderers this season is you are doing it yet again under massively inflated expectations, and also without a couple of people that I would see as your key people, as in Adebayo Akinfenwa and also Matt Bloomfield, left you a couple of months into the season. How are you doing it again? How are you just outside the playoffs in Sky Bet League One?
Honestly, Clem, it's taken a little bit of time this season because we lost those people, because we lost Bale. We also lost David Stockdale, who I didn't realise how big he was, you know, as a goalkeeper. We knew he was a joker and a bit of a clown around the place, but he gelled those boys together. He really did. And there was a lot of noise that you didn't realise was there until it went. You know, is it Johnny Mitchell, famous song, you don't know what you've got till it's gone or whatever. And it was, it went, you know, and there was space in the air, and it was like, oh wow, it's a bit quiet here now. So these new boys now coming through, you, not new, but your David Wheelers, your Jack Grimmers, your Sam Vokeses now are filling this space now, and their personalities coming through. But it took a little bit of time. And I think that early part of the season was a little bit of, it's almost like the mum and dad had left of the family. They'd gone, and it was like, who's leading us? What's going on here? You know, and not leading us on the pitch, because sometimes they didn't play Blooms and Bayo, but off the pitch they led. And Bayo, when he came on with 15 minutes to go, you knew he made such a difference at times. And it was me. It was my big general in the dressing room. He really was. And Blooms became a coach. But it took us a little bit of time to find out who were going to be the next group coming through. And they have done now, Clement. And we had a couple of injuries as well. I'm not going to hide behind that. We had a couple of injuries and the league's got stronger without a shadow of a doubt. You know, it's got tougher again. But thankfully, you know, people have stayed patient. There's a few calls for my head a couple of months ago. I was a little bit worried. It's the first time when that's happened for quite a while. But thankfully, they've stuck with me and we got into the playoffs on New Year's Day. We dropped out the day after when Bolton won. But to be in and around it again this season is just absolutely brilliant for Wickham. You know, we're really proud and I'm looking forward to the second half of the season.
Well, I'll come to the sort of managerial pressure, carnage, lots of changes this week I want to discuss with you and stuff. But just in terms of maintaining or tweaking that culture, do you have to let those names you mention evolve into bringing their personalities out? Or would you have a quiet word with some of the Sam Vokes of this world and say, time to step up? But it seems to me that a culture can't be fake either. It's got to be genuine. You can't ever replicate what Bayo brought to your dressing room. Ditto Matt as well.
Yeah, you're never going to replace them. You can't replace Akin Fenway. You cannot replace him. I'll tell you now. And Bloomfield, I'm going to give them all credit. Everyone's you. You can't replace you. But these yous were massive characters, so they were huge for us. So you're spot on, Clem. I can't go and force this. I can't push them. Go right. You go and fill that space now. You go and be that leader now. Because they had to organically make it. You know, and one of my big ones is Jack Grimmer. He's really come through this season, and he's really, you know, we signed Alfie Mawson, and that was brilliant. We failed a few medicals in the championship. We took a risk on him. He became this. But Jack Grimmer, for me, you hear his voice a little bit more around the place now. He's encouraging people, and he's playing the best he's ever played as well. So probably he needed that space as well just for himself to get going, you know. And, but yeah, Alfie's been a great signing. I think he's doing really well. And Lewis Wing from Middlesbrough, again, the club have backed me a little bit to get the better players of the league. You know, he's a championship player. Not too much. You know, we're not the Ipswiches or the Sheffield Wednesdays of the spending league, but we are definitely in the middle somewhere. And we do it the right way, Clem. You know, the culture is so important to me. We keep arguing on about it, but it is. And I'm glad to say the boys are coming through.
Can you share with us what's in your head? Because obviously you do keep being linked to what most people would perceive as bigger jobs. On the other hand, you look at the departures even over the last week or so of Dean Smith, who was on a trajectory, Walsall, Brentford, got Villa promoted, but then got sacked, took the Norwich job quickly, got sacked again. We've just heard that Darren Ferguson's going to return to Peterborough to the end of the season because Grant McCann has been sacked. The Cowleys made that jump from Lincoln to Huddersfield, only lasted 10 months, went for 22 months to Portsmouth. They've got sacked again. I will just remind everybody that Matthew Etherington has left Crawley Town after just 32 days and three games as well. I mean, how do you weigh up what you've got and your obvious influence at a club like Wickham v the chance to do it on a bigger stage? What's your weigh up process, Gaz?
The weigh up process is, for me, money's not my driver, honestly, Clem. And people will say, yeah, but if you got offered this, you'd go. And life-changing money would probably be ridiculously enough to turn down. But I've actually turned jobs down, not this season. I've been linked for a couple this season. You know, we got pretty far down the stages and my chairman is pushing and very active of going, go and take your chance. You deserve this, you know. So he's great at it. And so he wants me to move on. But he's also said, don't take this like I want you out of the club. If you stay, I'm the jackpot. He said, but I understand where you are. He's great, Rob Keurig. He's brilliant. So, but I did turn a couple of jobs down in previous years because didn't feel right. You know, I still firmly believe I would have been sacked by now if I'd have took one of those other jobs. And a couple of years ago, I think these clubs that I'm talking about have had two, three managers already. I'm in control of everything at Wickham. I'm really happy. And I'm trusted, and it's an honest place. And do you know what, Clem? Honestly, you get up and you every morning I wake up and think, right, I want to go and inspire the boys. I want to go and be in there and inspire them, not by being, come with me, I'm this great leader. I go in by being, spilling out my emotions, wearing my heart on my sleeve, being honest with them. And we sort of get through problems together and tough times together, and the good times are great. We're always smiling. I'll do stupid things, like if something happens in training, we're working on something in training and it comes off, I'll do a cartwheel in training just so all the lads look at me and go, what an idiot. But for them, they'll remember that. They'll think, Gaffer did a cartwheel. That must have been good, you know. And all these little things that I really enjoy. I enjoy the faces of my boys, honestly, and go, when they're going and they're smiling and happy, and even when we've lost, you know, people have come up to me and said, Gaffer, that was a great meeting because lads have been down, but you've done it really well and we're ready to go again now. And those moments for me are really important. People and moments are what, for me, is what life's about. People and moments. And that's money, great. A lack of money can make you unhappy, definitely, but money's not everything either, you know. So it's people and moments are really important to me, and I've got loads of that at Wickham.
Mm. I mean, that's really interesting because somebody told me that at Norwich, it was almost like if they won in the championship, which obviously they haven't done so much over the last sort of 15 games, but did have a lovely spell of 7 wins out of 8. It's almost like the dressing room is going, yeah, that's what we do in the championship, because they're so used, you know, obviously they've bounced back. Do you think that celebration and joy is something that helps to make up a football club culture? Yeah, you can't just take it for granted. No. Oh, we're below where we think we should be, so we have to win. That's our divine right, you know.
I'll make a bet that, and this is no disrespect to Norwich or their players, but I'll make a bet that they haven't celebrated a game this season like we celebrated on New Year's Day away at Peterborough. You know, we went mental off the end because we were thinking, what a great performance was. Everyone's high-fiving, smiles, music's on. It's like, that was a really important time for me. And I think that you have to celebrate those. This is what you're in it for. You can't just go in and go, right, we're expected to do this. So that must be a pretty hard place to be sometimes, you know. And I think it's tough for Dean, you know, tough because took over a team where the expectations are really high, bounced back 3 times running. That's going to be tough, isn't it? You know, the odds are against that. And what he did at Villa was nothing short of brilliant as well. So, yeah, I feel for him a lot, you know. But, it is those moments are really important for me. Those happy moments, those smiles on faces, you know, that's what gets me off. I really love it. And like I said, that's people, isn't it? That's people and moments together. They're great times at Wickham.
I want to be careful with this because, listen, there's quite a bit of criticism of stakeholders' hierarchical structures within football. I wonder whether it's time for media and supporters to take a little bit more responsibility. There was a kind of political quote. I don't want to get too political with this, but I thought it was quite salient. I think it might have been the new Prime Minister saying 6-8 weeks ago, not everybody can have everything they want. In that case, limited resources in the country, lots of money has gone out, etc. And I wondered whether if it was a kind of metaphor for football as well, and whether somehow we need to rein in expectations. At the end of the day, in the EFL's 3 divisions, there are only 10 prizes, 3 promotions from the Championship, 3 from League 1, 4 from League 2. Yeah. Have we got to have a reality check?
It's nice to say that. I watched Mikel Arteta.
Are you avoiding answering the question?
Well, I watched Mikel Arteta yesterday, Clem, and he did an interview before the Newcastle game, wasn't it? 0-0. And he said before the game, the commentator asked him, said, can you manage expectations at the club, you know, with where you are in the league? And he said, I can't manage people's expectations. And it was a great answer. He said, I can manage my team and I can manage what we do on the field and I can manage the players. He said, but I can't manage people's expectations. And that's a really good quote. I think that football as a whole may need to manage people's expectations of But it's really hard, Clem. It's really hard because the fans want success. They pay money to come, and there's this tribal thing where they want to get one over on the other team and the rivals. And it's so important to some people. These working class towns, all they care about is the football on a Saturday. And when they win, lose, or draw, it affects their week, you know?
Yeah, but I'm not trying to diminish that, Gaz. But if we take, for example, your football club, let's be frank, you have repositioned their natural place in the order of things over the space of your time in charge. But that doesn't mean it's an absolute shoo-in. You know, I'll still talk to some fans who maybe have had one season in the Premier League and are now in League One or something, and see themselves as a fallen Premier League club. And maybe that was the only season in an entire century plus history when they've been in the top flight.
Well, there's
a team
called Wigan who've done it once in 133 years in the second flight.
Exactly. That's my point.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're saying. I think perspective and reality, I think some people's perspective is way skewed, but they get carried away with this. And that's why we start the conversation. When you're talking about all those people who aren't football fans, they all know who Pelé was. Football's unbelievable for people. They just buzz off football, it's up to people themselves. They've got to have some perspective in this. And the intelligent ones do, but there's not enough of them. There's a lot of the social stuff and the herd mentality of the groups online, and it's tough, Clem. It really is tough. And for football managers, you've named them, you know, Grant from our game at the weekend, Danny Cowley's, Dean Smith's, you know, these players, they're in decent positions, these clubs, and they're still sacking the manager because they want to be in better positions. It's like...
I gather Norwich didn't really want to sack Dean Smith, but the supporters had turned against him. He'd had a bite at them the week previous. And I think probably with the statement that Portsmouth made as well, they said they were extremely fond of the Cowleys. They actually reiterated it, extremely fond, said. But just in the end, results... made them lose confidence, and they felt they had to make a move.
Yeah, I texted Danny last night. Actually, we texted each other last night. He was brilliant, and he actually said, "I didn't win enough games." That on his text message, you know, I don't know, he won't mind me sharing that. But so he feels responsible. But I said to him in my text, I said, "But it's not just you, Danny. It's your players on the pitch as well." I said, "It's the board and the expectations level that's been risen from that club. Look at our league now. What a super tough league it is." But you know, it is football. It's results based, Clem, like you say. So, I just hope that people don't get carried away too much, because you know trouble can come from that. And like you say, Dean Smith looks like it's fans and just getting to him. And if he's had a little pop back as well, that's hard for Dean, because he's a great guy. I love Dean Smith, and he must have been angry to have done that. You know, so multi-million-pound industry, isn't it? You know, it's the top of the train. People want to make money and get success.
I think it's potentially inconsistencies as well, because Norwich did at one point, I'm just reminding myself, no wins in their first three, then won 7 out of 8, then only won 3 of the last 15. That's including the couple of games since Dean Smith has left. And actually, I was looking back over the Cowleys' full season at Portsmouth, and they had a couple of runs. They did a 7 wins in 8 and a 6 wins in 7 last season, but they also did 1 win in 13. I suppose that confuses supporters, guys, doesn't it? That they go, my God, this is like we're going to win the league by Christmas form. And then suddenly you're in relegation form later in the season.
It's called being streaky, isn't it? And being streaky is quite risky. You know, if you are streaky, you know, if you're consistent, where I think we're never really streaky. We never go off like a train. We never go horrendous. It's sort of stuttering along, you know, and I think that helps me a little bit sometimes, that we have this consistency. But I remember the Portsmouth were top of the league at the start of the season. They went off like a house on fire, and they're probably a victim now of going to 12th, and it looks like the wheels are falling off, when really, if they'd have started a 17th, 15th, 14th, got to 12th, people would be like, here we come, we're coming. It's just circumstance and timing, you know, and unfortunately, we've lost a good manager there.
Yeah. Does it, when you hear a manager has gone, Yeah. And Grant McKenna's gone in the aftermath of you winning at Peterborough at the weekend. Does that give you a little bit of a jolt? Is your immediate reaction to apologise to the manager who, I mean, how does it work? Is there a kind of etiquette that
No. There's no apology. Grant won't expect that. I'll send him a text later. I know it's just broke this morning. So we're all, it's quite incestuous, the football manager world. We all know each other. And so I'll definitely send him a text and tell him, you know, he'll be back in soon without a doubt. He's a good manager. But no, there's none of that. I think we all know that we're in it to win it every game. And you do what you can, as long as there's no animosity or no, you know, knife in the back stuff. And that stuff is way gone for me. I'm 10 years down the line. I'm still considered a young manager, but we went through the league the other day, Clem. There's only three managers older than me now in League One. I'm absolutely devastated, I tell you.
Oh, my Lord. Yeah. How old are you?
I'm 49, and there's only three that are older than me. So, wow. Can you name them?
Wow. That are older than you. I'd have to look at the table. Wait a sec. Older than you. On this could be long drop. Go on, tell me. I mean, I could have a go at it, but it might not be very entertaining listening for everybody here. Go on, tell me.
John Coleman.
Yes.
Steve Cottrell.
Okay, yeah, I can see that.
And the last one, he's 2 days older than me, but it counts. Paul Warren. Derby.
Is that right? I wouldn't have got that. You seem much older than Paul.
Oh my!
let's just leave that there. What else did I want to say to you? So, looks as though David Wagner is about to be appointed as the new manager of Norwich City. He is out of work at the moment, so there'll be no compensation. Stuart Webber, the technical sporting director at Norwich, obviously knows him from the time they spent together at Huddersfield. Darren Ferguson back until the end of the season at Peterborough United, his fourth spell, that would be. And I just wanted to share this with you in stark contrast to Matthew Etherington losing his job at Crawley after 32 days and three games. The longest managerial tenure in senior English football. This is astonishing. Fred Everiss lasted 46 years at West Brom between August 1902. He didn't leave until May 1948. I mean, it's a very different game these days, Gaz, on all fronts, is it not?
I've got to get to 75 and still be the manager of Wickham then to beat that. Okay.
Yeah. Listen, I'm ruling nothing out. If you don't mind, I want to whisk you into the Skybet Championship. From looking very open, it's very much looking like Burnley and Sheffield United are, I won't say home and hosed, maybe Burnley are looking that way. They'll really have to blow up bad style to blow it, won't they? But suddenly there's a sizable gap at the top of the Skybet Championship in those automatic places.
Well, you're talking to a Blackburn lad, so hopefully they do blow up. But
okay.
I'm only joking, Clarets. I know you hate me anyway. Burnley look good. They look very good. And I think that the risk, was it a risk taking company as the manager? He's playing some super stuff, really, really good stuff. And I think that ex-Premier League team, they've got the finances. They're a big club. It's a tough place to go. I agree with you. I think there will be, anyone finishes above them will be in the Premier League next year. So Sheffield United, again, I watched them the other night against QPR and they look okay. They look okay. I think that second place is a little bit open. I'm being a Blackburn fan myself. They're in third place. And John Dahl-Thomason seems to be doing a stern job, though a little bit, like you say, inconsistent with wins and losses. There's hardly any draws in there. It's either they go.
There's no draws still. They've played, I can't believe this at all. They have played 26 games and not drawn a single one.
So, you get a result at Blackburn, I'll tell you that. So, I think they'll be okay. I think they'll be up and up around it. But there's still some huge clubs in that league, you know, that, they could make a last-minute dash. But then you've got your Lutons and your Millwalls and your the clubs that you wouldn't, you know, fancy to be up there are up there still. And they're upsetting teams as well, you know. So West Brom look like they're going to come. I think they'll come like a train and get in those players. I think Corbyn's a good.
Well, they are. I want to talk to you about those two. I want to talk about Borough because it's six wins in seven for Borough. It's seven in 10 since Michael Carrick took over. And then West Brom, you just mentioned, since Carlos Corberan went, they've won 8 of his 9 games in charge, 7 of them with clean sheets. He's picked up 24 points from 30. In both those cases, can one man really have that amount of influence in such a short space of time?
He can, and the reason is because it's a massive change. So it's not just the man, it's the change he brings. It's the whole change around the whole place. And that's, honestly, Clem, being a player at some football clubs, it's the change. It's not the man, it's the change. The change makes the difference. And then if they get hold of what the man wants to do, wow, they can be powerful. And obviously in both clubs, they've done it. But sometimes it's just the change that's needed. It is. It's just a fresh, like we're talking about the air before, where above you, it seemed it's a little bit condensed, it's a little bit clouded, and it just needs wiping away and going, right, there you go, fresh, here we go. And then whoever it is who comes in, that air is cleared now and they can go for it. And if they pick up what he wants to do and they love him and they're all firing for it, sometimes it can be really bad at the club. And then it'll just change. I mean, you know, West Brom looked like it was a bit of a mess, didn't it? It looked like, wow, there's something going on there, not right. And as soon as the change was made, it's not necessarily the man. It's just like a change. And a change was what they needed. And, you know, and Steve Bruce is a fantastic guy, unbelievable manager. But maybe the fans, they were getting at him. And it was there was a lot of stuff that wasn't nice about West Brom. And not Steve Bruce, just fans were horrible. It was like they and it just was that change that made a big difference. And it was a massive change because it's like a different culture, a different way of playing totally, you know. And it's not necessarily one way is bad, one way is good. It's just the change sometimes. And in this country, by the way, we love a change, don't we? They vote for anything in the general public just for change sometimes. So, it's the same in football sometimes.
Yeah, but in Borough's case, there's a bit of creativity in there as well. For example, Michael Carrick has repositioned Matt Crooks, who probably started his career as a rookie at Huddersfield as a defender, has played kind of central midfield for most of his senior professional career. And suddenly in training, Michael Carrick went,
he's the big man.
I think you're a big fella. You're 6'2". Do you fancy having a go up front? And, you know, 2 goals and 2 assists in the last...
And again,
few games.
Again, he's embraced the change of position. He's embraced that and gone, honestly, Clem, I remember playing centre-half once for Preston North End. I was a winger.
What?
Yeah, honestly.
What?
John Beck, who was John Beck, you know, brilliant manager, motivated, everything. He put me at centre-half for one game, right, because we were so short and I played centre-half. I had the best game because I was excited to play it. So I think there's that as well. I think there's that kind of thing. You know, you're excited to try something new. And you'll give it your all. And Crooksy, we played against him when it was Accrington, who's a good player, you know. And he's done fantastic. He scored 2, was it, on Saturday and set one up or something. So he was, real made an impact. But Michael, again, I've done a couple of LMA courses with him. Great fella, real good fella. And obviously playing at the place he played, he's obviously listened to what was going on to make that Man United team so good because he seems to be, you know, getting his stuff right. And fair play. Every manager in the league at the moment, I hope you do well. I really do, because too many of us get sacked.
No Sky Bet Championship fixtures this coming weekend because it is the FA Cup third round. Just give us a general overview of your division, Sky Bet League 1, please. Yeah. What are your thoughts?
The toughest it's been, Clem, for quite some years. And 8 ex-Premier League teams, Sheffield Wednesday, Derby, Portsmouth, Charlton, Ipswich, you know, there's some Barnsley, some real, real tough teams in there. There is some real tough teams. But... It's funny, actually. Your Morecambes and your Cambridges and your Cheltenhams are picking up results if you're not totally on your game. There's no gimmies in this league this season at all. You know, Derby going to, I think, Forest Green and drawing, you've got to be really on it. It looks like people are getting up for the big teams, really up for these big teams. So the smaller teams in our league, and I class us as one of them, but the smaller teams are actually helping a lot. For people like me and your Port Vales who are doing brilliantly in that league, and your Peterboroughs who aren't the hugest team, that these small teams are pegging back your Derbys, your Ipswich, your Lincoln, Ipswich Saturday 1-1. You know, great for everyone else. Plymouth, for me, I don't know what's going on there. They're unbelievable, Clem. But I don't want to disrespect Plymouth either. I think we've played better teams in like your Sheffield Wednesdays and but they just seem to be picking up points. They just seem to be super consistent across every single game. And I've got to give them credit. They're flying in the league, and surely they can't not finish in that top six for me. They're phenomenal at the moment.
Well, they are phenomenal, but it's still pretty all right. There's a gap from third to fourth, which is quite substantial, but still, bearing in mind the form they've been in, still not absolutely roaring away. Mind you, as well, those top three, because it does look like two out of three for the automatic places, unless you continue your great run. Still, those little pockets of inconsistency, aren't they? I think before they won the last four, Plymouth had picked up 3 points from 12. Chef Wed have won three in a row, but drawn three in a row before that. It's Ipswich has turned to drop a few points. It's just one win in their last four in the league. So they're giving each other a little bit of a chance and a sniff as well.
I think there'll be three spaces, Clem, honestly. I think out of the top six, as you say, two from three now. Barnsley may get involved in that, but I think there's going to be three spaces, and it's going to be an absolute bun fight for your Barnsley, your Boltons, your Charltons, your Portsmouths, your Wickhams, your Peterboroughs. It's going to be crazy. And you've also got your Port Vale curveball in there and your Exeters who seem to be taking to the League One football brilliantly. So fair play to them all, but hopefully we'll be in the mix at the end of the season.
Four Sky Bet League One fixtures this coming weekend, including fifth against the leaders, that is Bolton Wanderers against Plymouth Argyle. Sky Bet League Two, we've got to admire the consistency of the top three, haven't we? Gaz, Leighton Orient, Stevenage, Northampton, very different styles, very different managerial characters, but pretty consistently doing the business.
Absolutely. Leighton Orient looked like a very, very good footballing side going forward. They play some great stuff. They're very exciting to watch. Stevenage under Steve Evans, he has made wholesale changes at the start of the season, and you've got to give him credit because he took over a team that were really struggling at the bottom of the league last year, and I think he's turned over about 22, 23 players, crazy amount of players. And he's gone for a bit of experience. He's called me, actually, about a couple of my players that we may be able to loan out to him. So exclusive news there, which would be great for them to go on.
Oh, interesting.
Malted, yeah. So they're doing okay. And Northampton always been in and around it. You know, they seem to be very consistent every year. And I think got pipped last year, did they, by Joey's 7-0 on the last day of the season. That was an incredible result to get Northampton out of the playoff, out the automatics. So maybe this season they'll come up as well. But some super consistent sides in that league.
Yeah, if John Brady, the manager of Northampton Town, is listening, we will stop mentioning that great overcoming that Bristol Rovers did at the end of last season, because I'm sure you're sick to the back teeth of hearing all about it. What about the young apprentice, Matt Bloomfield? I was a bit surprised. Were you surprised he took that opportunity at Colchester United?
I wasn't surprised he took it. And if I'm honest, Clem, I wasn't surprised he was off it. You know Matt. I know Matt. He's your next modern manager, your next one coming through. He really is an intelligent boy. He's got his way now. He wants to stamp his way down at Colchester. I'm so pleased for him. He's really given me, what can I say here? I really feel like I've been a mentor for somebody, and I've not really done that before. But at 49, I can safely say like that, yeah, great, Matt. I've really sort of given you a few tips and a few bit of advice. I've never really thought that on anyone, you know, in the staff side of things. So him going over there, they won on Saturday. They had 37% possession. They scored from a set piece. I rang him up. I went, that might have been a Wickham team, that. He started laughing down the phone and he said, Gaffer, we just need to win. And he's done superb, really, really has. And I think the window's going to be big for him now. So he spoke to him this morning about a couple of players that he's looking at. And I think they'll be strong second half of the season.
Wow, you're dropping all the exclusives today. Will you have any squad left if you lend two to Stevenage?
I'm thinking of having any of my players, but he was talking about a couple of players that we've seen.
Oh, sorry. I misunderstood. He has affected a little bit of change. I mean, they'd won three of their first 21 matches. They won two of their last three. So there's definitely a change in the air. I do feel a little bit, just to come full circle on managers who have to look for another opportunity because maybe they take the plunge and one doesn't work out. Neil Harris at Gillingham, bottom club, already 5 points adrift, only won twice this season. I was absolutely startled to remind myself that they've only scored 7 goals and taken over just before Christmas by Brad Gallinson, who is a Florida property magnate. Paul Scally, the previous owner, had been in majority control there since 1995.
Yeah.
I feel a little bit for Neil, definitely in the position that the club are in, but you've been through that with US owners coming into a club. What will be going through his mind? What were your anxieties as new owners came in that have subsequently been countered in your place? But what will Neil Harris be thinking?
Yeah, he'll have had a remit from his owners. I think what was good when my owners took over, they gave me what I needed to do. They told me that, look, you've got to do this. And I think Neil will have that remit. It's obviously going to be survival, I think. Don't be surprised if Neil Harris doesn't survive with Gillingham. I don't think that they'll finish bottom. I've heard rumours that they've got some big targets for this transfer window. Surprise, surprise, centre forwards. As you say, the goal scoring has been few and far between, Glenn. But I think that with the right backing, Neil knows. He knows his way around the football team. He's gonna fight and scrap. And he was a scrapper, wasn't he? You know, he was no disrespect. With similar sort of piece from Pods, I think, me and him, you know, real, you know, fought for our careers and really would be there for you and put your head where it hurts. And I think Neil will get that team playing in his image. He said it's hard when you inherit a team and it's not yours. And, you know, he's finding it tough. What amazes me, Clem, is that the teams at the bottom of the league, your Rochdales, your Gillinghams were League One not long ago. And then you look in the National League, your Scunthorpes and your Oldhams are at the bottom of that league. And it's like,
bottom four, yeah.
Wow,
yeah.
You know, what is going on? This is getting super competitive now, but I do back Neil to get out of it. I think there's some teams down there with a bit of turmoil and not much finance and not as big as Gillingham. So fingers crossed for him. He's a good guy and hopefully he'll get out of it, but not at the expense of Matt Bloomfield, though.
Yeah. Actually, Gillingham's probably one of the standout ties in the FA Cup third round. It is a 12:30 kickoff on Saturday. They have got Leicester City. Sky Bet League Two fixtures include Northampton in third's trip to Salford, the leaders Leighton Orient at home to Doncaster Rovers, and seventh placed Mansfield Town at home to Barrow. Have we discussed where you are musically at the moment?
No.
Just to bring things right back around, what have you got on the horizon? You normally have something about to be released, don't you?
Yeah. No, we always do, Clem. Yeah. So there's been a few gigs going on. I picked the guitar up back again just to tighten up on those skills. I need to learn that better. If I'm being honest, not great. So I need to hone those skills a bit better. But the album, the long-awaited album from the Cold Blooded Hearts, is being worked on. Engineers are on it now, so all the stuff's down and all written and all recorded. I didn't realize how much goes into this. By the way, it's an enormous amount of work, you know, with everything, you know, and we're hoping to get released towards the end of the season. I don't want anyone thinking, well, he's releasing a record in February, it means all he's concentrated on his music. It will be at the end of this season. It'll be in the time when it should be released. I've definitely got other things on my mind. But we still gig, and every 4 to 6 weeks I'm out there gigging, doing a gig, whether it's a pub or a club, or covers, originals, putting smiles on faces and energising people. Still love it. And if I'm honest, it's just for me. I love it. It just takes me right back to no pressure and just thinking about the next lyric and the next chord rather than the next formation and the next opposition.
I was just reading a lovely story about a waiter pre-Christmas in a pub in Mayfair in London who went into a room carrying a tray of canapés backwards and bumped into somebody. And when he turned around, he had to go, "Oh, sorry, King." King Charles had been invited to a party in a Mayfair pub. Do you ever have people that haven't necessarily come to see you or don't know too much about the band, and then suddenly get their drink, sit down, then you burst on stage and suddenly go, "Oh my!" You can see people going, "It's Gareth Ainsworth. Yeah, he used to play for QPR. He's that kid, Wickham." Do you have that quite a bit?
We had a gig in Henley about 6 weeks ago. I was in Henley playing this wine bar, and just with three of us, it was in the band, and I know, you know, when someone looks at you and you'll get this fellow, and it's a double take, and I'm like, "Yeah, he knows who I am, but I don't know if he actually knows who I am, or he thinks he sort of knows who I am." And then the next thing out, he's got his phone out, and he's on his phone going, and he's to his mate going, "Oh," and I'm thinking, "Yeah, it's out of the bag now, you know." So, and I'm trying to sing, and I'm thinking, I hope he just doesn't think I'm a football manager who just fancies a bit of karaoke. I hope he does his research and knows that I have been doing this probably longer than football. But it was a good night in the end. But yeah, it is often that people think, "Oh my God, that's Gareth Ainsworth. What's he doing up there?" So yeah, it's nice. It's nice to have. But there's been no booze or anything yet. No rotten fruit chucked at me yet.
Listen, you could have a very nice end of the season then. Album released finally, and what, another playoff final for Wickham Wanderers? Wow,
that would be three playoffs in the last 4 years and one promotion season. That would be incredible for Wickham. But when you talk about raising expectation, wow. Yeah. It'd be incredible, Clem, if we could finish in that top six. It really would. And I would love that. And the album would be just an added bonus to everything. But no, I love it still, and still ready to rock and roll wherever I am.
A pleasure, as always. Thanks for joining us on the official EFL podcast. Go and check that Pelé album out. It's well worth a listen.
All right. Well, you go and watch The Boys from Brazil, and I'll check the album out. All right.
Got it. Thanks, guys.
Cheers, Clem.
Wasn't that great? A big thank you to Gareth Ainsworth. That's it for this first episode of 2023. If you've enjoyed it, please do give us a 5-star rating, press the subscribe button, and share on your socials. If you'd like to get in touch, podcast@efl.com. That's podcast@efl.com. My name is Mark Clement. Join us again soon for another episode of
the official EFL podcast.